from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron still at leisure. Bill Cameron still out there with the metal detector on the beach.
Still, hey, he's going to come home with a bunch of loot.
Looking for rare coins out there. Now, we'll have Bill back. Well, that's absolutely shiver me timbers. Well, it's bow leg season down in Northwest Florida, I believe.
Wait to meet his new parrot.
Oh man, that's gonna be the new co-host of the show. The bird on his shoulder. No, it's that's Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, who is pulling the rare doubleheader, the back to back appearance. So there's a weekend separating it, but Brian was here on Friday hanging out with us.
So much Auburn news over the weekend. We'll have plenty to talk about.
Well, you know, it doesn't always have to be just an Auburn deal, but it was we bounced around a variety of topics. You know, in the off season, you know, two weeks from today is the start of media days, All Star break as well, Home Run Derby night in Atlanta. 2 weeks from today, so a lot of cool stuff on the horizon. It's a time to, especially for guys who have been on the beat for multiple seasons, which I think is a diplomatic way of describing us.
You know, like 25,
26, I just said multiple, several, more than one.
Quarter century.
You know, exactly. I think it's fun to, you don't have a ton of opportunities during football season, and now that Auburn, not that it's rare, but with Auburn competitive in men's basketball and baseball, I don't think there's a ton of nostalgia, like, driven, you know, like, that used to be a bigger part of the off season, right? Is sort of waiting for football season to start, reminiscing about old football seasons and things like that. We're not doing as much of that because we've had so much to talk about in the world of Auburn athletics. Granted, not all of it football. But this has been, you know, with Don Dunn in here at times, and with you, the one and only, the official defensive line coach of The Drive. You know, it's fun to, you know, reminisce about players that we haven't talked about in a while, or think about games or seasons that come to mind, and that's always a fun thing to do in the offseason. We did a little bit of that on Friday, while also bouncing around a lot of different topics. But Bill should be back soon. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can text the show, 334-564-1840, on The Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also do the podcast. They sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. But we're very grateful that Brian Matthews, who has covered the team for multiple seasons, is coming in and hanging out with us for another show. Not a ton of pressing news. This is like golf tournament season for a lot of these coaches, right? Like, this is,
you just said a bad word.
Well, you know what? That was something. I was on the Doug show earlier today, and he sort of alluded to it in, you know, he had a sort of a broader line of questioning about Auburn recruiting and the cold snap that Auburn had found themselves in, before picking up some recruits last week. And he definitely mentioned Hugh Freeze is still able to go out and do what he loves, you know, was sort of the way Doug put it. You know, Doug's been doing this a while too, and I love Doug. But I think that was an attempt to sort of open the door to get me to talk about reports of how much Hugh Freeze has golfed this offseason. To me, that is, if you want to make a big deal of that, you know, go nuts. I'm not policing anyone's takes here.
Of course.
Yeah. I feel like there are more logical and probably more relevant reasons for Auburn's lack of momentum in recruiting. And I pointed to, and I think I said this with you on Friday a little bit too, Brian. It seems that, again, without knowing what's going on financially behind the scenes and how much of that is driving recruiting these days, I would think it's tough for Auburn to sell either the future when you have a young roster full of exciting players, and a lot of them can come back for the 2026 season. And also you can't really sell the past, right? Because and when I say you can't sell the future, you can't sell players being an immediate contributor because it feels like you have a pretty good roster. And then you can't sell the past because you haven't won on the field, especially in year two, like people thought you probably should. And most coaches that can't sell immediate contributions or a winning track record aren't really winning on the recruiting trail. Like, it's tough to overcome not being able to point to one of those two things. Hugh Freeze has been able to point to one of those two things in his first two and a half cycles as the head recruiter for Auburn. And I think it just speaks to how important the first half of this season is for Hugh Freeze to be able to have something to point to, you know, proof of concept, if you will, to show not just Auburn fans and his roster, but put players on the recruiting trail too.
Well, I agree. And I think there are a lot of things that go into recruiting. Like some years I would say what happens on the field in the fall has no effect on recruiting. It's about the personal relationships that you make in recruiting and getting players to campus and getting a taste of the atmosphere. And that was Auburn recruiting and recruiting in general before NIL came in. And, of course, after NIL came in, then it's for a lot of kids just a transactional decision, like who's going to pay me the most. But then you also get into situations where, you know.
And I don't want to right. dwell on one storyline too much because it could end up being entirely financial. Right, and it's like you try to figure out psychological yeah. or like, oh, it was about fit, and it was about kids being nervous about the lack of winning the last couple of years, and it's like, no, it was just finishing second on a lot of financial offers to kids versus some of these other schools. And if that's the case, I mean, I imagine winning would help, but it's not, you know, again right. like that's sort of the. You know, there's a part of the ocean where you can't really, there's no light down there and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in there a few times. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
That's recruiting. Like yeah. that's the financial part of recruiting is there's like, we can see some of what's going on under the water. You know, we can see a little, and then there's a whole bunch
right.
down there. And if you took a light down there, you'd probably get scared. Like, so it's, you know, that's what I would say. And so that's where, you know, and you can speculate, but like, yeah, do you have any sense of Auburn's financial competitiveness when it comes to recruiting especially in football at the moment?
Well, I think there is confusion and there are adjustments being made, right? Because every Power Four school or every school that opted into the House settlement has a $20.5 million budget to spread among the teams that they want to invest in. And every football team now has that budget. So within that budget, every position group has most likely a budget of some kind. So, and then you're in a situation where maybe some schools feel like they can offer more because of what they're expecting from NIL, but it's real NIL now. So some other schools are being more conservative, which I think Auburn was, and that number may be a little bit lower. So I think there's some of that going on with Auburn, or has been. But I also think, as we talked about, when you have uncertainty with a coaching staff, with a coach, and when you look at Auburn, year three, year 11 and 14, whatever it is, there's going to be uncertainty. I think a lot of that is created from the outside. It's not coming from Auburn necessarily, but it is being created on the outside with other coaches, and it is affecting Auburn and recruiting in that way.
I would love to know, and I know at least a couple of the folks over there listen, so, or at least they listen when Bill's around. Maybe they turned it off when they heard the opening of this one. But I've heard, no, when it comes to NIL, I would be curious as to, like, when you look at the most recent balance sheet for On to Victory? How much of the donations were corporate driven and therefore could potentially translate over to Auburn as genuine endorsements versus individuals invested in Auburn that wanted to see Auburn do well and gave to the NIL collective? Right. That's going to be a harder thing to sell as real NIL as opposed to corporate sponsorships and partnerships that I feel like could move over to a football program. And while it's still going to be tough for any of those entities to, because it, you know, it feels like the big thing they've attempted to root out is this individual is going to legally and without breaking any sort of official NCAA or conference rule, this individual is going to give a bunch of money to this player, call it NIL, and that player is going to go to a school or through an NIL collective. A couple of individuals are going to strongly influence one player's recruiting. Like it feels like they're trying to do away with that element of recruiting, at least through the official NIL channels that had been.
That's what they want. I don't know how well that's going to work. Well, you know, we'll see.
And it seems like a lot of the bigger NIL. It seems like a lot of the bigger NIL departments have sort of folded up shop and understood that schools are going to handle a lot of like they've been folded
right.
into athletic departments
right.
where
so they're still fundraising money, but that's going toward the money that's going to the players through the school.
Exactly. Yeah. But you're not having the separate NIL organization that is just sort of trying to funnel money directly to student athletes, in large part to either get them to choose a school or get them to continue to attend a school rather than going into the portal and picking a different school. It seems like more than influencing how players what players can and can't do as student athletes. It feels like they've sort of tried to start policing these NIL collectives in some way, and in response, even before the settlement, you had a lot of NIL collectives just either fold up shop completely or get folded into athletic departments in ways where it's like, okay, now it's the line is,
yeah,
there's still those individuals that gave money to NIL collectives wanting to influence recruiting. They still have somewhere to give their money,
sure.
But it may not if they want above board. They still have somewhere to give their money. Could there be could folks go rogue?
I've been going rogue for years now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So it's not. So I mean, I think that's and again, this is all under the sea. Right, like this is all like in the part of the ocean we can't see, Brian. Like in the dark. So it's but as you pointed out on Friday, Auburn did land a pair of recruits for 2026 last week.
They did.
The big happy.
Yep.
The New Zealander who's new to football, but a real athlete and someone who we'll see how he takes to football. But could be, could be a really exciting addition.
Could be a future NFL player. You just don't know. Or maybe a guy that's a squad player. Who knows?
I describe him as a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
More so even than your average, I got to be careful here. More so even than your average domestic recruit, right? I feel like a guy who's this new to football and it's so much around his tools and his athleticism. That feels like low risk and potentially nothing. But also potentially something really special.
Absolutely. Certainly a big guy that can move. He's got really nice, quick, soft feet, And you look at him in just a few highlights I've seen of him at a camp. You like what you see. And, sometimes offensive linemen.
It's also not his fault that he wasn't playing American football.
Right.
Like it's not the easiest sport to just pick up in New Zealand and play at a high level as a teenager, and so he was playing rugby, right? It's not Aussie rules. He was playing rugby there, which is not ballet. Still a contact sport, and still there's a lot of exertion required, and I mean you don't want to blow it out of proportion, but just seeing him move, right? Just seeing him go through some drills and showcase his footwork and get a look at his frame, you can understand why it could have been his first football practice And you can understand why some schools would say, that might be a guy who's going to play football for a real long time.
Absolutely. And, one thing about high school offensive linemen coming to college, sometimes they have bad habits you have to get rid of before you start putting in the good habits. And when you get more of a clean slate, a guy who hasn't played a lot of football, then you're starting right there with the good habits, you would hope. So,
how much football, do you remember offhand, how much football had Killian played when he came to, because Killian was a German who came to America.
It's a similar situation.
I don't know if he played
JUCO for a year or two.
I wonder
maybe.
If he played organized football before junior college, or if he came to, if he was like a prospect who came to America. I want to say he went to high school in Germany, came to America, played junior college offensive line for 2 years, and then came to Auburn as the nation's top junior college offensive tackle and started before his Auburn career was over. And I think that's something where, you know, again, I'm optimistic about the Heppy acquisition. It feels like a project that could take more time than your average recruit to see the field, just because of how new the sport is to him. But if they get to a point where they feel like he's ready to see the field, and I guess this is a little bit similar to Tuttle, right, where they thought Tuttle was going to take some time before he was ready, and then he was ahead of schedule, and they were looking for ways to put him on the field early in his Auburn career. You know, that could be the case with Heppy, where they are, you know, where it's not the same kind of curve they thought. But you can understand why the coaches are excited about a guy like that.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to see how his, you know, Auburn career goes, how he develops. It should be fun. I like watching young men like that because, like you said, a lottery ticket, you just don't know what you're going to get, and it could turn out to be incredible.
There are, you know, speaking of sort of younger players, like there are guys coming in on this team in their first year of college football who look like they could break onto the I mean, again, you got to be careful, but I would think the plan right now is you're going to see some of these freshman defensive backs, even though they've probably stocked the roster to the point where you could start guys who were back from last year, and the next men up could be transfers that you went and got in the portal, which limits how much you're really talking about true freshmen. I still would think that there are a couple of these true freshmen at defensive back where the plan is to get them on the field pretty early.
Oh, yes.
And a defensive line, they've also got some veteran transfers, but that feels like another spot where there's the opportunity internally. You saw Malik Blockton last year. There's the opportunity for young guys to break in and get on the field early in their careers.
Oh, absolutely. I think, without a doubt, Blake Woodby and the Diaz kid, I believe it is, from Baltimore. I think they're playing right away at defensive back for sure.
New boy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Him, I mean, too.
New boy Fagans would be on my left.
I was thinking of cornerback, but yes, new boy, absolutely.
Eric? I mean, you got Eric Winters too, right? That, you know, folks think could be, you know, in that mix.
I think new boy, because of the high school program he played in, is probably going to be more ready. More college ready, stepping in. Of course, both of them were able to go through spring practice. That's a big plus. But, you know, I'd put the money on Newboy, but I like Eric Winters and his upside a whole lot, too. They're both just superstar, I think, future really good players for Auburn going forward. And then on the defensive line, I've just felt all along that Jordan Crawford was going to play early and often as a nose guard. I just, you know, he's already one of the strongest players on the team. I think he has the right mentality, or will have that right mentality by the time we get this fall. And I just think he's a really talented guy. He's built to play that nose guard position. So I think he'll play right away. And I think some of those other young guys, like Marcus Autry and some of those guys, are going to play too. But I just think, you know, that playing time will increase as the season goes on. They're not going to throw them in there against Baylor and expect them to play 40 or 50 snaps.
I'm thinking that this time last year, that was the plan for Malik Blockton. Right, it's like, okay, Malik Blockton's gonna, because they have other older guys, and they'd gone in the portal for upperclassmen. You know, they'd gone senior heavy in the portal last year on the defensive line with, like, you know, Philip Bleedy and the Gage Keys, right, and some of the, you know, it's like they went and got some experienced players.
Yeah,
I think they thought they were going to ease Malik Blockton into playing time, and then he's out there starting. For, you know, I think that's where. Some of these freshmen. As much as I like this roster, freshman aside, as much as I like the experience on this roster, there are a couple of spots where, and defensive back and defensive line feel like the obvious ones, where I'm not going to be shocked at all if someone pulls a Caleb Harris and week two of fall practice, we're sitting there saying, is it just us or is that true freshman in the first team constantly?
Well, Jay Crawford was a great example. I said the wrong guy. Donovan Snarr is the cornerback I was thinking of. He's from Illinois. He's a terrific young player, a guy I think that was way underrated. Blake Diaz is a linebacker from Baltimore, who I think will play early and be a good player for Auburn at that position too, more of an outside guy there. But
Diaz is a really sneaky one because I think he could play more. The linebackers are pretty wide open, but Woodby's a fantastic. Would be looked ready for action in the spring. And it feels like defensive back and defensive line are spots where Auburn could be. They could have some players ahead of schedule and ready to contribute early on. We'll talk more with Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com when we come back. You are listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
The Drive, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Brian Matthews, AuburnSports.com, hanging out. It's crazy to think as June wraps up, our final show of the month of June, like starting tomorrow, you'll be able to refer to Auburn's game next month.
How about that?
Against Baylor. Yeah. I started looking for it more this weekend, and sure enough, back to school ads everywhere, right? Like a lot. Yeah. Those Walton Goggins Walmart Plus ads are just, I saw them constantly yesterday, channel surfing. And so it's, the sand in the hourglass is running out as far as your summer vacation and your ability to take a break, because we are going to be back in the swing of things big time very soon. Media Day's coverage starts in 2 weeks. Auburn will be going Tuesday. I think Auburn's day is the same as the All-Star game there in Atlanta. So we'll have a lot to talk about with Coach Freeze and whoever Auburn decides to bring. I would think we're close to that announcement.
Yeah.
As far as who could be representing Auburn, Keldrick feels like obvious.
That's almost a lock in my opinion. Yeah.
The obvious choice. Yeah. Not to speculate too much on it beyond that. I would say that when I've asked about leadership, in fact, I believe one of my questions to Coach Freeze after the A-Day game or the A-Day. I believe one of my questions to Coach Freeze was about sort of where the leadership has come from, because so many of the guys that I think we associated with last year's team as far as the leaders are gone. So many of the guys that were the most obvious, the most vocal leaders on the Auburn football team are guys who ran out of eligibility when the season was over. And I sort of asked, who's stepping up? And I think Damari was one of the first names that he mentioned, Damari Alston, and so that's interesting. Yeah, and it's a name that other guys have talked to, have talked about as well.
Jeremiah Wright was mentioned.
Jeremiah Wright's another player.
Connor Lue, another one to watch, I think.
Yeah,
line-wise.
I mean, and Auburn could bring Jackson Arnold, because I think you're seeing schools bring presumptive starting quarterbacks to SEC Media Days more and more. I don't think it would be all that shocking for Auburn to make that choice with Jackson, but I also think they could bring some guys who have been with the program longer.
Brandon Frazier's been with the program a very long time. I don't think he's been to an SEC Media Days.
No, he has not. They could. I mean, I guess they could bring Luke Deal again, but he's not on the team. But Brandon Frazier would feel like they've brought Luke Deal. I think they brought Cam Stutz. One of the media days in the last couple of seasons as well. So like there are guys like that would some of the I think anyone on the offensive line, right, would sort of be, you know, Dylan's been with the program a couple of years.
Another good one, yeah.
Jeremiah Wright, like you said, too tall. Connor Liu, like they've got options there as well. So I would expect to we're going to get that news from the conference and from the from the member institutions in the next couple of. Usually, I would say sometime by the probably early next week. If we don't get it the next couple of days for the holiday, I think it's probably early next week we get the list of representatives for SEC Media Days, and we'll find out who Hugh Freeze has decided to bring from this year's Auburn team. It's always a really exciting moment for those guys. I remember talking to Cam Stutz about it before and after he got to go through the car wash at SEC Media Days, and even as players face the media maybe more than they did in years past, or there's more media to tangle with. Like I think it's still really, you can tell it's really special to get to represent their school and their families and themselves, with the and put on the fancy suit, right? And I guess we don't have to ask as many questions now about where the suits come from, right? That's a thing that's gone away in the.
Yeah, I remember that too. My goodness,
in the era,
nothing better to do than this. Yeah.
In the NIL era, no. So it's looking forward to in SEC SEC Media Days in a couple of weeks where it's it really starts to it really kicks the season preview engine into high gear. Like you get a lot more of the storylines that folks are looking for, and there are. Not to carnival bark about this upcoming football season, I think there are a lot of coaches under real pressure to produce in the SEC. I mean, you think we didn't have a coaching change in the SEC last year.
That is hard to believe.
Everybody in a 16-team league, the 16 coaches that went to Media Days last year are all back at SEC Media Days for a second year in a row. I can't imagine everyone's going to make it three. Like I can't imagine a scenario where everybody does enough to keep the barbarians at the gate, keep the wolves at bay. That probably includes Hugh Freeze. You know what I mean? As far as he's one of the coaches that I think folks would point to as under pressure,
under watch.
Yeah, he's under observation.
Yeah,
if you will,
that's the way to put it. I wouldn't call him on the hot seat yet. I mean, maybe a warm seat.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
I just don't think Auburn is looking to do anything. I don't think there's a groundswell of if he doesn't get it, he's got to go. You know, I still think there's support here. There's a belief in what he's doing recruiting-wise. But boy, oh boy, would it sure help if he could start winning some games.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like being a loss away from the hot seat doesn't put you in the hot seat.
No.
But you're like.
It's, 2-4 will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. Look, I think it'll gear up if you don't come home from Baylor victorious.
It'll that Monday on the show will be
the next.
Quite,
the next couple of weeks because you can't do point I made to Doug earlier today. You can't do anything after you can't do anything positive in the two games between Baylor and Oklahoma. Like, there's nothing you can do that'll convince people. Before the Oklahoma game, if it doesn't look good against Baylor, there's nothing you can tinker with. Especially considering last year, like you looked great against Alabama A&M. It was a slam dunk contest. It was a home run derby against Alabama A&M, and then the offense couldn't get out of its own way against Cal. You make the quarterback change. The new quarterback looks brilliant against New Mexico. The team that whoever Auburn beat up with Hank before Arkansas, and then the offense can't do anything when it faces an SEC team again. So I can't imagine a scenario where you're going to fire people up with performances against overmatched non power conference teams. Although, as folks will point out in Hugh Freeze's first year, you can certainly do some damage if things don't go well in those games. And so I think that magnifies Baylor too. Because if a poor performance against Baylor could fester for a couple of weeks. Boy. Because you can't erase the memory of it by beating up South Alabama. Like, that's not going to work. That's not that's not going to convince me. You can't look bad against Baylor, look good against South Alabama, and have folks convinced that it's fixed. You know, look out Oklahoma. That might actually be what happens. Like, you might sputter against Baylor and then fix it and then look good against Oklahoma. But no one's going to believe that's going to happen.
Until it happens.
Until you go out there against Oklahoma and play well. And in the meantime, the mind will wander. Like, the mind will race. And it'll just be, it'll just make things more difficult for all parties involved. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Dan Peck, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. This is The Drive.
Is sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Monday edition of The Drive. In case you think we're just replaying segments, you know, I'm letting you know, hour number one, as Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is hanging out with
and
us. Brian,
on three and Auburn Live all combined together now.
Hold on a second, Brian. Yeah, I was going to say, I gotta learn how to correctly describe your outlet. Because there have been some the winds of change have blown into AuburnSports.com.
That sounds like a song from the 80s,
right? Yeah.
The winds of change.
How about that?
Yeah, I bet Bill. Well, I'll talk about that too. I publish my Monday Musings again. Yes, so right now the sites are combined. That's Auburn Live from On3 and AuburnSports.com from Rivals. They are combining as we speak. We're not finished with that combination. And so we'll be working together. I think eventually the site will become AuburnSports.com, but we're going to, you know, take our time putting everything together and figuring out a plan for that. On3 will be sort of the football team coverage and portal coverage, while Rivals will be the football recruiting and basketball recruiting coverage. So that's how we'll kind of run those two portions of that. But six of us now are working together. So I'm teaming up. Me, JG, and Caleb Jones are teaming up with Justin Hokanson, Jeffrey Lee, and Cole Pinkston to form this Auburn mega site now. And we're just going to crank out the content every single day.
So wait, so Brian and Jeffrey, are we doing?
Oh yeah, back together again.
Oh, I love this. Yep. Yeah, no. And Justin Hokanson sits behind Bill and me at the football games in the press box, and so we annoy him. We annoy him all season long, and so
perfect.
So what should I call it? Like, what when I say Brian Matthews from? I don't have 10 seconds to list a whole bunch of websites. So
just say Auburn Rivals On3 or Auburn On3 Rivals, something like that. For now,
we're going with On3 Rivals.
Yeah,
okay,
that works. Yeah.
Okay, Auburn On3 Rivals welcome to the new guys. I guess I mean it's a merger, or you know, however we're
merged.
Yeah,
merging. Okay. We're in the process of merging. You're watching the cells combine right now as we speak.
It's very exciting development with a bunch of guys that I like a great deal. Yeah. The Musing survives.
They did. It took me they've got a brand new admin I had to learn. I'm not sure if I did everything right, but I did manage to publish a story on the new site today.
Oh, very cool. All right. So. And would, can you tell us a little bit about what you wrote about and then maybe work your way down to the good stuff at the bottom?
Yeah, we can do it now. I wrote about something I think we've talked about on here, is how Auburn's third season under Hugh Freeze could align with what happened with Billy Napier in Florida a year ago, right? Napier went on a much hotter seat than Hugh Freeze did this time last year. He got off to a really tough start. The recruiting was in the tank, similar to Auburn.
Things seemed so cold for Florida this time last year. Yeah, going into media days. Yeah, it was profound.
The AD had to issue a statement in November saying that Napier would be back. 2 days later,
trounced by Miami opening day. Yeah, too. It was a nightmare beginning.
And 2 days later, after that announcement, they got trounced by Texas on the road.
Yep.
But then they came back. They won four straight, including two of our ranked teams. And they finished on just an incredible run in recruiting. I think they flipped a total of 15 kids to finish up, including Tavares Dice from Auburn, if you remember that. And they finished with the top 10 class. And Auburn can do something very, very similar. They've got a coach and a staff that is known for flipping great players, right? They've done it for 2 years. They did it as soon as they arrived in Auburn with the guys like Keldrick Falk and Kyan Lee, right? Just in a month, they were here. So this is something they do and do well. They just got to go out there and get it done on the field. So I talked a little bit about that blueprint, I called it, for getting that top 10 class.
Yeah, I've been asked about, you know, the possibility that Hugh Freeze is experiencing negative recruiting on the trail because of his health or because of the suggestion that he's on the hot seat. To me, it's like I don't think other coaches really need to forward. Like, it, to me, it's not even about other coaches forwarding the narrative that this is a crucial season for Auburn. Like, it's you know, whether or not other coaches are selling it, it's absolutely true that there's no more horizon that Hugh Freeze is going to be able to point to after this season and say, just wait. Like, this is the season where you're going to need to see results, yeah, or it's going to be tough to convince. Like I said, not just players on the trail to climb aboard, but keeping this roster together, which Hugh Freeze said was going to be one of his biggest challenges.
And this past offseason, which he did a great job doing. Basically, Braden Joyner is the one guy that left, but you can understand why he left.
If you had projected as far as returning players and who could be on the two deep and where, pretty much everyone you would have projected back in December is back.
Yeah.
And that was
everyone you wanted except for Braden.
And that was something Hugh Freeze talked about in November as one of the big challenges in this era. And I don't know if he's going to be able to pull that off again if he can't point to a successful season on the field. I think it'll be much tougher. And then that doesn't even factor in high school recruiting and the possibility of having to go in the portal. Like that's just about keeping this roster together. Yeah. So I think it's a pivotal season, just like last year was pivotal for Billy at Florida, and it felt
until November 16th or whatever it was, like it was, you know, falling off a cliff. Then it just turned around.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you saw parts of it in October. Like you saw elements of it turning around. I think the thought that DJ Lagway could be special was sort of a hey, wait a minute moment, because then you thought, well, this team with a quarterback that scares people is a different proposition altogether. I think it's a couple of factors that suddenly turned Florida into something of a trendy team this year. And I think Lagway is probably the biggest reason why folks are high on Florida going into this season. But I like the comparison as far as if this Hugh Freeze thing experiences triumph at Auburn, sustained success, I think there is probably a comparison as far as having to reverse the momentum a little bit in the way that Billy Napier had to do last season at Florida.
Well, I don't want people to think just because Auburn's 64th or whatever it is right now in recruiting that they can't have a really good class, because it is the end of June. Things can change tremendously over the next 5 months. So that's what I wanted to write about there.
Do you think Auburn could have a really good class without improving the product on the field as far as wins and losses?
No.
Like, I think it would be, it feels like, you know, having another.
They can have a solid class. If they're staying together, this head coach and this staff, even with a bit of a disappointing season, they can still have a good staff, because this is the best recruiting staff Auburn's had in my 25 years, I believe, from top to bottom.
That would be, and again, you don't want to give them, like, you don't want to put too many variables in there, but like, if they were able to resuscitate the recruiting class without on field, like, you know what I mean, without collecting signature wins,
yes,
and sort of like, to me, that would be tough, that, I mean, would be
really tough,
that would, right? Be remarkable, yeah, to me, is because, and because
we,
yeah,
and we haven't even talked about the fan base, right? They're so, I mean, I've been a part of this since 1985, okay, I know how it is. You know what I'm saying?
And I, you know what? And I thought that for the first 2 years, you know, I think people who said be patient had a good point.
Sure they did. But that was,
I think,
for the first two years.
If it doesn't look right against Baylor, you're going to have a hard time telling folks to be patient.
No.
Even with a quarterback making start number one, you know, probably. Like, it's like, hey, well, I guess no matter who the quarterback is, they're making start number one in Auburn. even considering that, like you were able to tell folks to be patient for 2 years,
right,
with some certainty as far as why they should be patient. If it doesn't look right, it's going to be tough.
It is. It really is.
It's going to be tough in just a little under 2 months away.
I know.
June 30th for the August 29th game.
Such a big game.
And Wings 94.3 will have that one, of course, because Auburn football, Auburn men's basketball, Auburn baseball, Tiger Talk, all on Wings 94.3. Right, and we'll be getting that going again back in August. We'll probably visit with Andy at media days, I think, is the hope. We'll track him down if he makes the trip up to Atlanta, and then probably in August we'll start visiting with him on Monday or on Tuesdays pretty regularly again. That was always a lot of fun during football, men's basketball and baseball season, to get a word in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, and yeah, looking forward to chatting with Andy again very soon. 334-321-1390. Love to hear from you. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one. You are listening to The Drive.
The Drive with ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Auburn, yes. Rivals on three?
Yes. Or on three rivals, however you want to call it.
Auburn on three rivals?
Yeah.
Auburn rivals on three? Okay. Yeah,
either one.
Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron.
It's a merge.
On the beach with the Mai Tai.
Mm-hmm.
At the umbrella.
The short shorts and the
lime and the coconut.
And the cutoff t-shirt that doesn't quite cover the full belly, right? Yeah.
I think he's going full Hawaiian shirt. Yeah,
okay.
Interesting. I don't think it's a cutoff.
Missing a button, maybe?
Situation. Yeah, potentially.
Miss a line, possibly.
And you know, he found a new button, though, with the metal detector.
Probably got that, I don't know, what is it called, the zinc?
Zinc oxide, baby.
On his nose.
Yeah, he's got a little, I love bubbles.
We don't want to get, sunburn.
Zinc oxide on the nose, important stuff. Music,
yes.
from your piece today?
I, even though we're going back to 1984, 41 years,
okay,
I still think you're going to nail this
okay,
one.
All right.
It does have some in-state Alabama.
Ooh, exciting, okay.
Okay. We're going back 41 years to the highest charting single from a legendary Heartland rock musician that included a video with a future star actress from Birmingham, Alabama.
Ooh, future star actress from Birmingham.
Mm-hmm. Heartland Rock.
Is it Springsteen?
It is Springsteen.
Is it Dancing in the Dark?
It is Dancing in the Dark.
With Courtney Cox?
Boom, boom, and
bum, bum, bum,
boom.
Bum, 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 bum.
Triple boom, yes, that's it.
That's right, which was later spoofed on... when she hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, she did the dance again.
I believe during the first or second season of Friends, because that video is 84, you said?
Yes.
Courtney Cox is cast in Friends a decade later,
yep.
Becomes a star. She'd already been in Ace Ventura, but she's in Friends, and I think that's what launches her into
And she started on Family Ties. I guess she was a guest on
Family Ties. Had been in a lot of pilots, but like nothing that had taken. Yeah. Is the female lead in Ace Ventura, and then gets cast on Friends, yeah, and hosts SNL early in the Friends era, and I guess during her monologue, they make light of her being the girl from the Dancing in the Dark video, and then Adam Sandler, who was still in the cast of SNL at the time. Adam Sandler gets up doing his Springsteen impression and dances like Springsteen with her, and they recreate the scene with Sandler as Bruce Springsteen. Nice. But that's fair. Yeah, Courtney Cox from the Dancing in the Dark video,
and she has short hair in that video, and they put her there. This is real concert footage, and they kind of placed her there. I think it's from two different nights. And then, of course, at the end, he brings her up on the stage, and they do that dance together. Mm-hmm. And I watched some other videos. Apparently, this is something that Bruce started doing at other concerts. He would bring somebody from the crowd and have them dance with him there at the end of that song. So, which is pretty cool. I mean, if you were there at one of those concerts, that would be really exciting, I'm sure. I'm trying to think
Legendary live shows, Bruce.
Oh, yes.
One of the... That's a good Super Bowl halftime show. If folks want to go back and watch, at the beginning when he says, "Put the chicken fingers down," he yells, put down the guacamole and the chicken fingers or something like that is what he yells to start the Super Bowl halftime show. But anyways. Good stuff from always glad to get a Springsteen reference in there.
And couple of things. Brian De Palma was the director for the video.
Yeah, how about that?
Yep, and
brilliant Brian De Palma.
This song finished number two in Bruce Springsteen's to this date has not had a number one hit, although he did write a song and eventually release it that Man for Man Earth Band covered
Blinded by the Light,
Blinded by the Light, which became a number one song. So it's
a song performed by Springsteen has never
been. Yeah, on his first album, and then it was covered by Manfred Mann.
But a Springsteen performed song has never been number one on the Billboard Hot 100.
He's had some twos and a bunch of top fives and top tens.
How about that? We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive. Stick around.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Auburn on three rivals.
There you go.
Joining us, the brand new, the newly christened website, the super group, right? It's like it's like traveling Wilburys of the Auburn beat, right? You're George Harrison. Jeffrey is Tom Petty.
I like that.
Justin Hokanson can be Roy Orbison, okay. Or
he might not appreciate that, but okay.
Well, he could be Dylan. He'd be Bob Dylan instead. Is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, he can be. You know, you're the Dylan. You get to be the Dylan of this group. I'll put you in. JG can be Jeff Lynne or something. But it's very very cool, very exciting new website that folks should check out as rivals and on three have merged, and there's going to be a lot of exciting coverage here locally of Auburn football, Auburn men's basketball, Auburn recruiting through the work you guys are doing at that company. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Sort of a wide open hour number one. Talked a little bit about the stuff that Brian had been writing in the musings regarding the recent developments in recruiting for Auburn, the stakes of this season. You know what Hugh Freeze can and can't do to sort of reverse some of this momentum. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we talk about that. Didn't talk too much about Jabari Smith and the contract extension. Exciting news for an Auburn product. Get the nine-figure deal from the Houston Rockets. I mean, that's – and again, you know, the NBA salary cap has skyrocketed with the way that the media rights deals have kicked in and like a 100 – what's it, 122? Is the number, I believe. You know, the amount of money that Jabari is getting guaranteed from Houston, like that money was a max contract 15, 18, 20 years ago. Like that's what Tim Duncan got paid to stay with San Antonio. And it's you know, things have changed a little bit where Jabari, I think it's still based largely on his potential.
Right.
You know, the Rockets are giving him this deal with the belief that he's going to continue to develop into a quality player they can have in the rotation and an exciting teammate for Kevin Durant. But it's a different NBA now as far as, you know, when you hear about these eye popping amounts of money, and that is just a gigantic contract for Jabari Smith, and a guy who has five star coming out of high school. Superstar in college, high lottery pick. You know, he's been able to make it work at practically every level, at every level, and now he's it's a couple years in the NBA, and Houston's betting big on him. A lot of folks thought he could be traded this offseason. Houston's a team that is, when you go and get a Kevin Durant, you're not rebuilding. You're not waiting. Like, you're trying to maximize however many years Kevin Durant. I mean, Durant's entering year 18, year 19 in the NBA. He's not waiting to compete. He needs to compete right now. The fact that the Rockets think that they're better off keeping Jabari Smith rather than including him in a deal for a more proven veteran to pair with Kevin Durant is I think that's a vote of confidence from the organization that drafted Jabari in the first place. Guys like Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, and Jabari Smith are players that one would think if you were going to make a deal to put a superstar co-star next to Kevin Durant, those are the guys you would trade.
Yep.
Instead, they're giving Jabari Smith money and thinking you're going to develop into something for us, and that's good news for maybe Auburn's. I mean, we were talking about. I mean, Jabari, Walker, Isaac are Auburn's highest profile NBA players.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully Janai can join that list. In Philly. But those are your big and now Isaac's on the move to Chicago with the trade traded for Lonzo Ball earlier this week. I think that happened during the over the weekend, and Jabari Smith gets a bet. So just a handful of Auburn guys in the NBA and a couple of them in the news in the last couple of days with and Walker was in the news when his girlfriend won Miss America. And then,
that's pretty awesome.
And then Jabari, and then
way to go, Walker.
And then Jabari got $122 million from the Rockets. Isaac Okoro. It felt like things were ending with him in Cleveland. He wasn't really a priority towards
number
the end of the season.
Number 5 overall pick a few years ago. Yeah.
But a Cleveland team that was trying to win right now and didn't really utilize him in the Pacers series. I think with the injuries to Haliburton and Jason Tatum. And Lillard, I guess for that matter, like Cleveland could be the favorite to win the East right now, and they're making a move to get someone who maybe helps them a little bit more offensively with Lonzo Ball, who battling injury concerns, but is a nice piece for a team. Excellent defender. He's blossomed into a fantastic defender and a guy who can help move the ball and make his teammates more dangerous offensively. So it's a new start for Isaac, and it's a Cleveland team that's gonna gonna keep trying to keep their championship window alive for another season or two. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We got Philly Fanatic
all right
on the phone. What's up, pal?
Yeah, I want to say something about the new Aussie kicker punter from Oklahoma State,
Hudson
Cake.
Yeah, I think it's Cock.
Okay. Yeah, he's a really funny guy. Did you see the SEC half-hour program Auburn, where he punted the ball twice at 40 yards into a trash can?
Oh yeah, he's got a lot of personality.
Yeah, he does. You know, Campbell was a good punter, but he wasn't as accurate as I think as Cack. But actually, Aaron Sipos, who played I think a year or two with the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
he was incredibly good at hitting the coffin corner and also punting it down to his own players inside the 5. So we'll see if this guy can do that.
Yeah, I really liked Oscar and Auburn. You know, I think Auburn's done a good job I think Auburn finding and you mentioned Sipos, who was great too. Like, I think Auburn's done a good job of going out and finding punters from the other side of the world. In this case, they've got a guy who's played college football already and has a track record in the United States as a punter. I think Hudson, he certainly, like, Auburn is, it has not been as pressing as some other issues this offseason, but there's a need for the special teams to improve. I think especially when it comes to field goal kicking, there were some return game mishaps as well mm-hmm. that Auburn needs to iron out. Punting hasn't been as big of a concern, but in the aftermath of losing Oscar and trying to find an answer, like Auburn, I think Hudson looks like he can be a steadying hand, steadying foot, I guess, at the punter position.
Let me say one more thing. Did you read the article about Anna and Billy Davis, who are twins from San Diego? Are you familiar with that?
I did not know.
These are incredible. They're siblings, and he's a freshman all-star on the golf team.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, the golfers.
Yeah.
And she's the one on the tennis team. Unbelievable. I mean, they came from California, and they're going to be like freshman All-Americans.
Yeah, and I think one of them.
How often did that happen?
And one of them was one of them was being recruited to Auburn as a student athlete, and I think the other like tagged along. Whichever one's older, I was familiar with the story. I think Auburn might have been recruiting him as a student athlete, and she tagged along as a tennis prospect and decided to also attend the school. It's a deal like that, and you've seen that with. A younger sibling wants to attend the same school as an older sibling. I guess twins that are superstars in different twins of different genders that are superstars in different sports is more uncommon. Like you don't encounter that very much. But I think when you realize that one of them was recruited to a school and the other one also took a liking to that school, it becomes it becomes a little bit less far fetched. For the Davis siblings.
One more thing, I've got to do my muse. This is from iHeart, and they listed the five greatest rock and roll songs of all time. Let's see if you can name one of them.
The five greatest rock and roll songs of all time.
Johnny
Be Good.
Yeah.
Hey, that's number that's a good five. One.
All right. Yeah, from Back to the Future. Johnny Be Good. Satisfaction.
Next, not on there. It's a great song.
Oh wow! Okay. The Twist.
No, that's mine, but it's not on.
Yeah.
There.
Okay. No Chubby. No Chubby.
No Chubby. You gotta go back further than that.
Do the Beatles make the list?
No.
Okay, so there's no Beatles song. All right, I was gonna guess like I don't know, Ticket to Ride or Hey Jude or something. Maybe You Can Drive My Car, something like that. All right. Is there a Beach Boys song on the list?
Nope. How about an Eagles song?
Hotel California makes it?
That's a great one. Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Here's another one, Bob Dylan.
So we're going...
These are part of the...
Is this like a Rolling Stone?
Yeah, you got that one.
Okay.
Okay. Two more now. You need some more hints?
Now, yeah, what are the other two? Just go ahead and give them out.
Okay. Stairway to Heaven, number one.
Okay, Stairway's one.
I was thinking Zeppelin.
All right.
I should have guessed that.
Bohemian Rhapsody, number two.
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody's two. Okay, yeah.
That's good.
They got an honorable mention.
I'll tell you what's happened to me with Bohemian Rhapsody, though, is that I think in the aftermath of the movie, it's become so commonplace. It's a little bit like what the Sopranos finale did to Don't Stop Believin', where now... The last Queen song I want to hear is Bohemian Rhapsody. Like if you're gonna go to the jukebox and pick a Queen song, there are seven or eight choices I want to hear instead of Bohemian Rhapsody. Just like if you're going to the jukebox and picking a Journey song, there are seven or eight I want to hear instead of Don't Stop Believin'. I understand that some folks it's their favorite song. It's their favorite song by that artist, their favorite song in general. To me, yeah, I'm okay having her. Like I've maybe reached my lifetime quota of times I need to hear that song.
Yeah, that's like the guys who teach guitar. They said when the guy sits down, he says, "I don't want to teach you Stairway to Heaven," because that's like everybody has a guitar wants to sing that song.
There's a joke in Wayne's World about Stairway to Heaven where Mike Myers' character goes and sits down at a guitar shop. And he's going to start playing a song, and an employee at the shop points to a sign on the wall, and it says, "No Stairway to Heaven." And I thought that joke was, I believe some of that joke is people, that's the first song that guys start playing when they grab an electric guitar at the guitar shop, and they've outlawed it. But I also think that's a joke about how expensive Stairway to Heaven is to clear for a movie. Like if a movie wanted to use Stairway to Heaven, it would be so expensive that in the movie they're saying, "Hey, character, you're not allowed to play Stairway to Heaven."
Well, it's a long song too, but it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's only a 2-hour movie, so they would have had to make some room for Stairway.
All right, good talking to you.
Yeah, great stuff, Philly. Appreciate it. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Appreciate the stuff there from Philly Fanatic. Let's get to Daniel, who's on the phone before we take a break here in hour number two. What's up, buddy?
Guys, I nearly lost my entire question thinking about these songs and what I wanted to bring to the table with you guys. I thought it was Wings 94.3 there for a second.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
Well, hey, I wanted to ask, what ramifications do you think we could see with Auburn now switching to Nike, the big day being tomorrow?
That's right.
Do you think this will have a recruiting impact? Do you think this makes Auburn more attractive as an athletic department? I'd like to think so, but I don't want to just fool myself.
I think it mattered more in the pre-NIL era. I think that your school affiliation had a lot to do when schools had to really rely on accoutrement to attract students because you couldn't provide real dollars and cents legally, and there was I think being a Nike school for status, or being a Jordan school, or being one of Adidas's priorities, I think that probably mattered more. And being an Under Armour school probably hurt when you were in that era of retail providers having that kind of say. Feels like things are a little different now. It's going to help. I don't know if Under Armour, it sounds like Under Armour sort of getting out of the college apparel, getting out of, they're winding down that aspect of their business. They've left a couple of the biggest schools that they had in the portfolio in the last couple of years, including UCLA and now Auburn, that have gone elsewhere. So I would think that you're probably better off, with a brand that's prioritizing, that stuff and not, and not sort of looking at it as an albatross or a way to trying to get out of the industry, but it probably doesn't have the same impact that it would have had even a few years ago, with regards to switching from Under Armour to Nike.
I think where it does help is Nike's brand, Nike's reach globally is so much bigger. I think it's going to help Auburn with sales of merchandise overall. I think there are more spots, more places, better system to get stuff out. So in that way, it can help recruiting because you need that money to go into the athletic department to help pay for this new revenue sharing. So in that way, it can help out a little bit. And I think having Nike shoes will be good for Auburn athletes across the board. I don't want to get into some issues with the previous shoes. And then, I, as you mentioned, I think it's just overall more exciting for young players to go to schools that are Nike or Adidas than Under Armour right now.
On the shoe front, I'd heard that had gradually improved. Like I'd heard that, especially for the first decade or so of the Auburn Under Armour partnership, there had been unhappiness with the shoes in some of the sports. Especially like some of the highest profile sports, and Under Armour was relatively new to making shoes at that point. Their business has progressed, and they've gotten. I think their reputation has changed a little bit as a shoe provider. But it's not Nike. You're right, and that's one aspect where I imagine that's going to. And if it still matters on the recruiting trail, then you're getting the benefit of whatever bump from jumping from Under Armour to Nike.
Yeah, and there was a time, if you were a Nike school, it was certainly help you in basketball, right? More so than maybe any other sport, along with being at Nike or Adidas.
Yeah, really. I think the thought was that Nike and Adidas had been in the AAU game for so long that it was tough as an Under Armour school to make headroad on players that to make inroads on players that had that had already aligned themselves with Nike or Adidas.
And back in the day, that was a way to get players to schools with some under the table, moves that worked really well for certain power schools decades and decades.
Yeah, no, and nobody knew anything about that basketball. Until 2017, 2018 or so when it all was exposed.
Right. Man, well,
yeah.
Thanks, guys, for the feedback. I would love to see a small detail I would love is if they got if they just scrapped the small Auburn print on the front of the football uniforms and they just rolled with a classic AU logo on the V collar. I would love to see that. But
yeah, I mean, Under Armour didn't tinker. Appreciate it, Daniel. I mean, Under Armour didn't tinker with the roster too much. You know, Auburn has sort of resisted change to the football roster, and in favor of the traditional look, the blue up top, home road jersey, you know, home jersey, white up top, road jersey. You know, I think that was something when Nike first entered the picture. You know, folks thought could you see changes to any of the seemingly minor parts of the uniform? Could you see an overhaul or something drastic changing? I'm curious to see what Nike decides to do. As far as changing the look of the jersey.
I know I've wrote about this before, and I'll probably write about it again maybe next week. But I'm all for alternate jerseys for Auburn. No, I'm not saying you roll out orange jerseys for the Alabama or Georgia games, but how about you roll it out for Alabama State or whomever, right? And let me tell you why. Two reasons. One, it's a good reason to be excited about those games, right? It's a pulling point. And number two, you can sell those jerseys, right? And that's what athletic departments and Auburn is all about, is trying to find different ways to make more money. And that is a way to make more money. So they need to start having certain games, having some alternate uniforms, doing something different. I love the classic Auburn. I'm not saying you should change that. That should be what Auburn wears against Alabama and Georgia and LSU or whomever, but there are other games where you can bring out some different uniforms.
All right, so my controversial stance on this, yes, Brian, is if it's up to me, mm-hmm, my answer is no. I want navy and white only. If okay, it's up to me, if you're telling me I have to pick a third, mm-hmm, I am team powder blue over team orange.
Why not both?
Okay, I'm just saying, if you're forcing me to pick, like, I do not want an alternate. I want just the two. If you're forcing me to pick a third, then I'm saying do an early 80s Bo Jackson baseball style tribute with the powder blue jerseys. Maybe Auburn script on the front for the powder, like and do it. And if your point is that you can sell a third one, I think you'd be able to sell that too.
Oh yeah,
like I think you'd absolutely. And again, I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying that's my preference over orange personally. Yeah. If we're going with a third jersey,
and I think most other sports at Auburn have orange jerseys in their collection, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
or at least so, alternates.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a that's something that's and of course Nike's been so involved with Oregon. Right, that I think people start thinking, you could have a different jersey.
I don't advocate for that. Right, I don't like that.
Yeah,
I like the classic Auburn jerseys. I love the Stormtroopers. I love the home blue jerseys. Sure, yeah. I'm not against them anyway. I just think once or twice a year, a season, you can roll out something a little different, and it's not gonna, nobody's gonna drop dead.
How about this? A home jersey for the whiteout at home should be white.
That's just ridiculous that they did this stuff.
I'm firmly of the opinion that one of your four home conference games should be a whiteout and you wear white jerseys. I thought that to me is now for non-conference, because I understand the conference rules. For non-conference, you have to have some participation from the other team if you want to wear white jerseys at home. For the SEC,
no, it was for conference. You have to have the teams approve it, right?
No, for conference, because LSU gets to wear white at home. A conference game, as the home team, you get to pick which jersey you want. For non-conference games, traditionally it's home dark, road white, unless there's an agreement between the teams. I believe LSU, the belief is that they pay a little bit more for non-conference home games, and they have the right to wear the white jerseys at home as part of it's contractual. Auburn could make it contractual for a non-conference. For an SEC game, if they wanted to wear white at home, they could just say we're wearing white and the other team would cooperate.
Here's my strong opinion. If it's a whiteout, as you said, Auburn should be wearing white uniforms. Blue out, or whatever you want to call it, blue uniforms. Orange out.
Uh-oh.
You better put on those orange uniforms. And stripe the stadium, you better stripe those jerseys, buddy.
You want a striped jersey for the striped stadium?
I mean, wow. Look, it's got to go hand in hand.
Okay.
All right? I mean, you can't have You can't have a white out and have the team in blue. It just doesn't make sense. Especially if you're playing a team like Penn State at home and they're wearing their white jersey. You're cheering for the other team. It's just not right.
I believe the white out last year was against Oklahoma, right? And Auburn wore white. Or Auburn wore the blue jersey.
Yeah.
Oklahoma was in the white.
And we see what happened, right?
And I don't know if that was necessarily the reason why, but I understand what you mean.
I'm at war with the marketing department over this. I really am.
Brian
I feel
Matthews.
Like, yes.
Opening a shadow marketing department himself.
This is unacceptable, Auburn.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. That's the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Our number two of the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from Auburn Rivals on 3 hanging out with us on a beautiful Monday afternoon here in Auburn. A little bit warm, but it's a got a little bit of rain, but it's been tolerable as we exit the month of June and work our way to July. And again, crazy to think that I mean, but Drew, do you know offhand when the fall classes start back up? Do you know August 18th? Okay, so it's I think that we're gonna power through July, beginning of August. It's gonna feel like on the. I mean, fall practice will accelerate some of that too, but it's gonna feel on the verge of football season. And like we said, starting tomorrow, you can talk about Auburn's game next month. At Baylor Friday night against August 29th against the Bears in Waco and
Friday night football.
It felt like a huge game on a weekend full of big games. The fact that you've got Auburn and Baylor playing on Friday night, where I feel like at least for one night the college football world is going to be paying attention to what's going on between those two teams.
A little trivia question. Do you know the last time Auburn has played on Friday night?
On Friday night is...
Our Friday afternoon.
Evening. I mean, there was the Black Friday Iron Bowl, right? Wasn't there a... Or was that on Thanksgiving? Did they play a Friday?
They have played Friday Iron Bowls before. You're in the right.
Like 08?
This is a famous Iron Bowl, though. Famous. You're close.
Was it kick six on a 13?
Nope.
Was it 2010?
Yes.
Okay.
The
comeback. There was that stretch of Iron Bowls early in the Saban era, right, where they'd moved it off of Saturday, right? And I think
we had one on Thanksgiving, didn't we?
I want to say 08 is on a Black Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe 09 is on Thanksgiving Day itself in Auburn.
I'm thinking there was one. It's been a minute.
I think that's right. I think Thanksgiving Day or Black Friday 09, and then 2010 was. And it's the first time Auburn's played on the Fox Network since the Cotton Bowl against Nebraska. That was the end of the 06 season, so probably New Year's Day 07.
Yeah, I was there for that. That was quite a week.
And as we mentioned with
me and Jeffrey Lee have some stories from that.
I do remember that one. And there was a and
were there, you there?
I was not in Dallas. Oh, okay. I was not in Dallas for that one. I was in Tampa for that Outback Bowl. But no, I was not there for the Cotton Bowl. Zach Taylor was the quarterback for Nebraska in that game. Who's now the head coach of the Bengals. He was Nebraska's Bill Callahan's guy there when Auburn. That's nearly 20 years ago when Auburn faced Nebraska in that in that Cotton Bowl.
Which game was it? Was it David Gibbs? Was that the defensive coordinator? He wouldn't get off the bus and talk to us. Was that the Cotton Bowl?
I think that was Wisconsin. I think that was the.
Was it like 2005?
I think that's the Wisconsin game after the 2005 season.
Yeah,
bowl
that
game
right.
In
that's another great memory.
Orlando, maybe that might have been. That
sounds right.
Yeah, that might have been Orlando. I'll check with Don Dunn next time we talk to him. I'll check with Coach Dunn. 334-321-1390. I'll tell you what, let's take a break to get a little bit closer to being back on schedule rather than launching into a new topic with Brian Matthews from Auburn Rivals 24/7? No, that's it's on 3. Auburn Rivals on 3. The new website, the new project. So very cool to be talking with our buddy Brian. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from Auburn Rivals on 3,
mm-hmm.
which if I say it enough, it'll just be like the
it'll
phone
just
number.
Merge together in your brain.
It'll be like the phone number. I'll say it and I'll rarely get it wrong. Like the phone number for The Drive. 334-321-1390. Got it right that time. Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And it's always great to check in, Brian. Any word? We know that. Yeah, I mean, we're a couple weeks away from the baseball draft.
Yes,
Ike Irish.
Yes,
I've seen folks extremely bullish on Ike's draft potential. First half of the first round, yep. Potentially, depending on who I've seen several folks who think in general the college hitters might rise from where they've been earlier in the draft process, because you're getting some high schoolers that are a little bit harder to project, and maybe even some of them talking about going to college and playing college baseball. So it's Ike Irish could very well play his way into very early draft consideration. We were talking about Hugh Freeze trying to keep the roster together when the team experienced turbulence last season, and in the event of turbulence this season. Great year for Butch and the baseball team.
Yes.
There was, I think, a lot of interest in keeping that young group of players together,
yes.
and whether or not Auburn would be able to have Auburn would be able to have most of those young pieces back for another year. So far, so good.
Yes, and I think the baseball portal closes. Is it tomorrow?
Soon, yeah.
I think it's coming up. So far, so good. Most importantly, with those five freshmen, that's the key. Got to hold on to those guys. Keep them coming back. They're five players that you can build this team around, and from everything I've heard, they're all planning to return. I'm not saying there could not be some crazy, surprise here, but I'm not expecting it. It would be a surprise.
Right, and that's, I mean, when you think about how much of this past year was built around contributions from true freshmen or even second-year guys, like I think that there's the thought that you can bring back a core, a real core of young impact players. Like that's something not everyone in the SEC can look at their roster and say they've got returning.
Yeah, and Chris Rembert is a great example. He's playing for the USA baseball team this summer, and just today he led off, I think, with a 444-foot home run to left center field. I mean, and this guy batted, I'm around 350. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but he had a terrific freshman season. Getting him back, Bub Terrell back, getting Chase Fralett back. It's just Andres Alvarez, Christian Chatterton. I mean, those are some really, really talented freshmen. And if Auburn can retain those guys, they're going to have a terrific team to build around next year.
Right, and that's something where, I mean, when you saw those guys this past year, the freshmen that were thrust into action for the Auburn baseball team, I mean, you were impressed. I would imagine you were impressed by what they were doing their freshman year, but you're also thinking, give a Bub Terrell or a Chris Rembert a full season, you know, a full off season in the program, and think about what could be possible in year two. Chase Frelick too, like all three of those freshmen that Auburn was leaning on in the starting lineup for a big chunk of the year.
Yep.
Like the you know if they can, you know if things go right this off season, the possibility of what those guys could do in year two. I mean you're talking about three potential stars at the SEC level.
I mean, Auburn hasn't had five freshmen like this, and I can't remember the last time they had. They've had a great freshman like an Ike Irish, you know, or whomever, usually every other year or every year or so, but not five like this. And, you know, if those pitchers, you know, do the normal thing that pitchers do from freshman to sophomore and go from maybe a 5 or 6 ERA or whatever to like a 3-something in the SEC, then those guys are what you then you can have those studs that all these other teams have on their pitching staff that can shut down an SEC lineup on a weekend.
Alvarez and Chatterton both seem to me like they would be guys who should approach this offseason as though they're going to be weekend starters next year. Right? Oh, yes. Like, I mean, those are two guys who at different points in the yep. year, Chatterton more early, and then I think the way Alvarez closed the season, like you left thinking both of those guys are potential.
Oh yeah,
you know they could be in the mix for the Friday spot, but they're two of your three starters all season long. If they stay healthy and they continue to develop, you know that's a huge thing to have coming back is two young players like that.
And then you got Drew Whalen coming in from Western Kentucky. A proven guy. You got left-hander Jake Marciano.
Seen a lot of excitement about Whalen, the Western Kentucky acquisition.
A guy who could certainly step in and be a starter. Jake Marciano from Virginia Tech is a lefty who, like Auburn's freshman, had a really good freshman year, and you would expect him to take that next step up, and he's a lefty. So he's a guy to watch for one of those starting spots. So there's some really, really good pitchers coming in, returning. Even some guys that maybe you don't necessarily think a lot about. Connor Gatwood did not pitch this fall. I don't believe he did. But, you know, he's coming off an injury. This summer is big for him. He could come back and be a star, maybe a closer, maybe a big reliever. You know, he's got that high 90s fastball that he can bring. And then Mason Koch was a guy who was coming off an injury. He'll be back, I believe. He could potentially be your closer there now that he's back healthy. Jackson Sanders was one of Auburn's best pitchers, a freshman, in the fall. It didn't necessarily translate consistently to the spring, but what can he do in another offseason? Then Saxon Roberts, another freshman. I don't believe he pitched this spring, but has a terrific potential and is you know healthy now, and he's a guy to see what he can do over the summer. Maybe he can add a pitch here or you know take some steps forward. So they've got a lot of options now at pitchers, plus what they're bringing in.
Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com, Auburn Rivals on 3, joining us on a Monday afternoon. Really appreciate our buddy Brian hanging out with us. We'll take a break, come back to wrap things up. Final segment of the show on the way. You are listening to The Drive.